Oh, hey, you guys, and welcome back to Good Old Days with me, Jax. I hope you all had a very, very good weekend, being Halloween and all, and there's candy everywhere, so I absolutely love this holiday, and therefore, I love the weekend, and I just sat around on Friday night and ate Mexican food and candy corn, and I, like, watched pretty much all the Scream movies because Netflix had, like, 1, 2, and 3. I don't think they have the fourth anymore, but I just watched them all in a row, and that ended up expanding into like Saturday and Sunday. So at that time, it was a very good weekend. But right now, I feel like throwing up from all the sugar, so I'm not really liking this weekend at that point. But oh well, it was still a good Halloween, and I can't believe that it's already November. So happy November! Oh yeah, and happy daylight savings time or whatever. I don't know. It's like fall or spring, go back, fall, jump forward. I don't know. I think I have it the other way around. Who knows? Okay, I'm making everything a holiday anyway. So this Monday is our 8th show here on Penguin Radio. And quick little announcement, my show podcasts, along with my fellow DJ shows, are actually now up on the website. So definitely check out radio.dominican.edu. If you follow the link to podcast archives, you can actually listen and catch up to all of our shows. So that's cool. And now for our show today, we are going to listen to one Southern rock band, and then we have two traditional country, country solo artists for a second. I don't know why I thought we had like a band. I don't know where my mind is going now. But anyway, so then we will listen to a modern song for the week, and I decided to go with a mainstream country one for this time. So that's what I have in store for you guys today. And yeah, and we're ready to rock. So let's start the show with our second female singer so far. And like Dolly Parton, who was the first lady on Good Old Days, this woman is also a huge name to country music. So let's go ahead and listen to one of her songs. This is Miss Patsy Cline. I already butchered it, right? Patsy Cline with her song, You Belong to Me.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while, you belong to me. See the marketplace Algiers, send me photographs and souvenirs. Just remember, when a dream appears, you belong to me. I'll be so alone without the jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember, till you're home again, you belong to me. I'm gonna be so with rain. Just remember till you're home again.
So you guys just heard You Belong to Me by Miss Patsy Cline, and I love this kind of stuff. What a great song by her. And I had to toss a quarter and do the whole like heads or tails call for deciding this, because it was between this song and her other song called She's Got You, and they're both probably, I mean, I like a lot of her songs, but these are probably my two favorites by her. And You Belong to Me is actually my father's favorite Patsy Cline song, so I ended up going with that one. But I still wish I could have played She's Got You, just because it's also, it's another love song, but it has like a different approach, and it's not the typical like, I love you, you're my soulmate, and you make me smile, blah, 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 blah. Not that like those aren't sweet, but I can only listen to a song like that for like 30 seconds before making fun of it and ruining the thing, because then I'll just start mocking it like you guys just heard. Anyway, so I highly recommend She's Got You. Fantastic song by her. I think all, there's something about like the older songs about love that I just feel like are so nice, and like these days, I feel like I throw everyone under the bus, but like I just think like One Direction and Justin Bieber and like all those kinds of people who like have love songs, and it's just like, I don't know why, it's just, it's the same message, and like they're really, really sweet songs, but there's something about them that just is super, super annoying. But like I could listen to like Jim Reeves and Patsy Cline all day every day, and I do, so it works out. So she was from Shenandoah Valley, which is in Winchester, Virginia. And she was born there in 1932, and she was actually born as Virginia Patterson Hensley. That was her real name. So her true talents were quickly recognized, and that combined with her nature and spirit just brought her up to the top of the country charts by the early 1960s. And because of her popularity and her personal style, it stayed that way. She really held that spot. Now, Patsy Cline's big break came when she won the Arthur Godfrey Talent Program in 1957 with the help of she performed Walking After Midnight. I still wanted, I was like, She's Got You, but she didn't release that song yet. That's how obsessed I am with it. So yeah, she had Walking After Midnight. That was the big hit. And after that victory of hers, she went on to pursue a recording career accompanied by the main show for country music. You guys know the Grand Ole Opry in 1958. And Patsy Cline is another country artist whose career was cut way, way too short. Her musical career and her life was ended in 1963 when she was in a plane that crashed in Tennessee. Seriously, you guys, during the last shows, I've made plenty of observations. I didn't even actually realize this. It took me being on the show and like kind of discovering these artists. Like I knew already, but I feel like the show and putting it together and having to talk about it, I was like, oh my god, like putting it on paper, I was like, holy moly, so many people have died this way, and so many of my favorite artists have died in a plane crash, which is way too many. And Miss Patsy Cline unfortunately adds on to such a horrible list, so that sucks, and it's giving me like major airplane anxiety right now. Like I feel like I'm just getting like heart palpitations. And even though I don't travel that much, because you kind of need money to be able to do that and go see places, and I have like none, so my adventures like are traveling to my nearest like food store to get some type of ethnic food. I don't know, that's as good as it gets, and then that's as far as my adventures usually go. But I was actually invited to go to Las Vegas for New Year's, which I don't actually think is happening anymore, because me and my friends all equally suck at planning everything. But we were supposed to go, yeah, like in a few months, so if that does happen, I might be freaking out a little bit when the plane takes off, even though it's only like a 3-hour flight, maybe not even that long, probably shorter than that, but still, I'll be thinking of Lynyrd Skynyrd and Buddy Holly and John Denver and Jim Reeves and Patsy Cline, and I'll just pray for the whole entire flight. Okay, anyway, so back to Patsy. Even though she had died in 1963, Patsy Cline was elected into the Country Music Hall of Fame, adding to what a respected vocalist she was, and she's still considered to really be one of the major female vocalists of all time, and I think hearing, you know, her voice, that kind of proves it. Also at the Shenandoah Memorial Park where Klein rests, there's actually a bell tower there in memory of her. And in addition to the tower, there's a Patsy Klein Memorial and Patsy Klein Boulevard in Winchester, and they were both named after her. And as for her accomplishments, an album released in 2005, which was Patsy Klein's Greatest Hits, that record sold 10 million. So that's a long time since her death, and she's still, you know, has been able to influence people a lot with her music. And besides that, she's also been the number one female artist in both 1961 and 1962. And then also in 1962, she had a number one song called I Fall to Pieces, which this is another one that I love. And Patsy Klein had a number one jukebox record called Crazy, which I also love. And ever since I was little, for some reason, this is just a weird, I don't know what it is about my fascination with jukeboxes, but it's probably because Mel's Diner is like one of my favorite places in the world. Well, at least it was when I was a little kid, because I remember the food being like so much better when I was a kid, because I think it was me and my dad just like went to the city one day to spend the whole day there. It was like maybe a few months ago, like or earlier this year, I don't know. But I went there and I ordered like just a salad and a BLT and a milkshake, and their milkshake was bomb and the BLT was like cool, except like, I don't know, I get really upset when people like always have to add something like funky, like a certain like spice or like herb that's just like, ugh, like why, dude? Like a Caesar salad just tastes good being a Caesar salad, not a Caesar salad with like thyme. You guys know that herb thyme. I can't stand that. But they did that. They ruined my BLT bread and the Caesar salad with it. So it was just not happening. It was just not as good as when I was like a little kid. But I'm not giving up on it yet, because I have a lot of faith in Mel's Diner. But yeah, since I was a little girl, I decided that if I'm ever rich, I will have a room in my house, which probably won't happen because I probably won't be rich. But anyways, I'll have a room in my house that's like super like decked out. And like, it'll probably be the basement or something if I have a house with a basement. And I'll have a huge TV and like a pool table and foosball table and an air hockey table and just a cabinet full of like the best junk foods ever. I'm pretty much describing my neighbor's pool house right now, but still. And I'd have a jukebox in it. They don't have a jukebox, so I'm one step ahead of them in my fantasy world. So I'd have a jukebox, and then I'd play all my oldies, including Crazy by Patsy. And pretty much, if you guys have seen the movie Big, it's like a really, really old one with Tom Hanks. And in the movie, he like buys his own place eventually, and he just puts the coolest stuff in his house. And that's exactly what I would do. I would just copy everything that they did. I'd do the huge trampoline in the middle of the like the living room space, and then I'd have bunk beds and a basketball hoop and blow up dinosaurs so they could be my boxing partners, and I'd have a soda machine. And yup, I guess you could say I like the finer things in life. I'm just so mature since I like such adult things. But anyways, Patsy Klein's parents, Samuel and Hilda, had a pretty big age difference between them. And her mother was only 16 years old when she married Samuel, and he was like 25 years older than Hilda, and eventually the two of them ended up separating. So after they split up, Hilda became a seamstress so that she could support the family. And then at the age of 8, Patsy actually taught herself how to play the piano, which soon led her into discovering her true passion for singing. And that voice of hers was something else. It was incredible when she first came into the music industry, and it's still incredible now, really, compared to some recent singers. No offense to them, because I know I have a few that I'm thinking of, but I know like a lot of people these days can really, really like sing and belt their hearts out. But I just feel like Patsy Klein had such a unique voice. Like, I don't think I've ever really been able to hear a voice like her ever. And I've been around for 21 years, so that's saying something. I try to use the wise, like, experience card, but then I realize that I'm not, like, a 60-year-old, so it doesn't really work out, but, well. So, anyways, she is known for having a smooth and emotional-sounding voice, which really helped her break down the gender barrier. I just combined those two words. Did you guys hear that? The gender barrier in her particular music genre industry. And that time, she just really kind of was a different voice, because I think, and as you guys probably have heard now, like, we had Jim Reeves, and we're going to have Jimmy Rogers later around that time, which was kind of like the main male voices. So as a woman, I think it was really great for her to be included in that genre. So going back to her life before fame, when she was 16, Patsy Cline ended up dropping out of school so she could go to work instead. And she did this because her mom and her siblings really needed the money. So she picked up jobs in a number of places, and she worked at like poultry plants and Gaunt's drugstore. She worked behind the soda fountain counter. And with whatever free time she had, Cline began her singing career, and she started to perform on local radio stations and entering plenty of singing contests. So in 1952, Cline started performing with Bill Pierre and his group, and that's when she was encouraged to change her first name to Patsy for their shows. And the last name Cline came when she got married to Gerald Cline, completing her new title of Patsy Cline. And even though she eventually divorced Gerald Cline and she later remarried Charles Dick, but she kept Cline. She didn't change it to Patsy Dick because it doesn't sound too great. And then in 1954, she was signed to a record label, and it was slowly taking off from there for her. So after a few years, and that's when she got a spot on Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts show, and that's the one where she performed with Walking After Midnight and won. And with the help of that, the song made it into the pop and country charts. So after a while and into the 1960s, she had a lot of good things happening and success, and her country music career was just really, really booming. And meanwhile, she joined the members of the Grand Ole Opry in Tennessee and went into a new record contract with even more hit songs. Then in 1961, I think, she was involved in a pretty intense car crash, but she survived and it didn't keep her from her country music, because the following year she was actually on top of the country charts again, and she was performing with Johnny Cash. She started touring with him during this time, and she also joined more artists, June Carter, she's coming soon on Good Old Days, and also George Jones. And since she had such a good career, she didn't really hesitate to help other female country singers. Like, there was Loretta Lynn being one of the main fellow singers, and Cline tried to help them out with her own careers in the industry, which I feel like is such a like a sportsman like move, you know what I mean? Because I just always feel like sometimes if you're in this industry, it's such a competition to really be like the most recognized and the most popular, and you don't really want anyone coming in and stealing that kind of spunk away from you. So it's really nice that I feel like, you know, she was able to take her experiences and her success and kind of spread them to other female artists. I was like, female songs. But even after all of this, she ended up dying when she was only 31 years old when the airplane went down in Camden, Tennessee. And despite her death, the song Sweet Dreams was released, and it gained a whole lot of popularity, and that was a major factor in her being considered as one of the greatest country musics, even after, you know, she was no longer alive. And fun factoid, the life of Patsy Cline was portrayed in Sweet Dreams, a 1985 movie that starred Jessica Lange. You guys might recognize that actress from American Horror Story. Jessica Lange is like the crazy neighbor woman, Constance, with the crazy son who like went on a bit of a killing spree, and that was the first season. And then I know she's Sister Jude at the insane asylum place. What do they call that? That season scared the bejesus out of me. It was like Briarcliff with bloody face or whatever. I love those episodes. And then she was Fiona, and recently for the new season of Monsters Among Us, she's Elsa Mars. So yeah, that actress she played Patsy Cline in Sweet Dreams. And also, if you're ever in Virginia, you can head into Winchester to visit a little piece of history, and you can check out the Patsy Cline historic home there. And now we are taking a quick break, and then we'll be right back with the rest of the show, so don't you dare leave me.
Hey guys, Harley D here with your 3-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. Could you spend a night in a hotel that left you tied up, covered in snakes, and drenched in blood? It's a question that an amazing 24,000 people are eager to answer as they wait to try to spend one night in McCarney Manor in San Diego, California. The manor has the honor of being named the world's scariest hotel. Visitors travel between 4 terrifying locations and often find themselves trapped in cages, tied to chairs, and sprayed with blood. Visits to the manor are filmed so spectators can watch on global webcams as visitors try to attempt and survive up to 8 hours in the hotel. It is a challenge that so far no one has ever completed. Pennsylvania State Police say they're looking for a man pretending he's Pittsburgh's District Attorney, Stephen Zappala, to steal beer, pizza, and other goods. They say his story at one business involved telling embarrassed employees they hadn't given him all the products he purchased. Police say the fake Zappala drives a car that looks like an unmarked police vehicle and got away with $40 worth of pizza and a case of beer. Felony charges are pending against 18-year-old Benjamin Hawkins after police discovered 500 pairs of stolen panties along with firearms in his bedroom. He was arrested last Tuesday, at which time cops found 5 pairs of underwear shoved down his pants. In Minnesota this past weekend, 24-year-old Riley Luis Swearingen pled guilty to disruptive intoxication. According to the criminal complaint, Mankato Department of Public Safety Police Sergeant Adam Gray was talking with a driver of a party bus in the city's entertainment district when he felt 2 fingertips that were obvious to him as wet with saliva being pushed into his right and left ear canals, which caused pressure and discomfort in his ear. The officer turned and saw a man later identified as the suspect. He is facing charges including assaulting a police officer with bodily fluids. A New York State man was sentenced to 2 years in jail after accidentally texting his probation officer a message seeking marijuana. Prosecutors said Alvin Cross Jr. of Albany sent his probation officer a text message reading, "You got some weed?" Authorities responded by raiding Cross's home and seizing a bag of cocaine. Cross pleaded guilty to cocaine possession Monday and was sentenced to 1 year in prison. An extra year was added to the sentence for violating his probation. I'm Harley D. signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
And we are back to Penguin Radio. So now we're just moving right along into another segment with another country singer. Very, very old country. I think this is probably, well, I mean, he's like the oldest country singer ever, but this is going to be the first old one we've had. I've never said old so much in one sentence. So we're going to go pretty far back here to the father of country music, and that man is Jimmy Rogers. So here's his song, "In the Jailhouse Now."
I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob, who used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Hooray! Holy, 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 holy. He played a game called poker, pinochle, whist, and yoker. But shooting dice was his greatest game. Now he's downtown in jail, nobody to go his bail. The judge done said that he refused a fine. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Ali-o-li, 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 Ali-o-li. Ali-o-li. went out last Tuesday, met a girl named Susan. I told her I was the swellest man around. We started to spend my money, then she started to call me honey. We took in every cabaret in town. We're in the jailhouse now. We're in the jailhouse now. I told the judge right to his face, we didn't like to see this place. We're in the jailhouse now. Ali, ole. Ali, ole. Ali, ole. Ole.
All right, so that was In the Jailhouse Now by Jimmy Rogers, a man who only had a chance to record 110 songs during his lifetime, but he still managed to be the first inductee in the Country Music Hall of Fame, so yay! And we are going to talk about Jimmy Rogers right now. He was born in Meridian, Mississippi in 1897. I'm pretty sure, but it's weird because there's some documents that Jimmy Rogers has actually signed, so they're not so like some random pieces of paper, but on them it says that his birthplace was actually Gear in Alabama, and that's what it's listed as, and it's the home of his grandparents. So again, it's not like a random place, and people have researched it and tried to figure it out, and they classify his birthplace officially to be Mississippi, so who knows. And it's not like, again, Alabama was just like some weird accusation or something, because Jimmy Rogers's mom passed away when he was young, and he actually spent those following years living with some relatives in Mississippi and also in Alabama near Gear, because his father worked a lot and he couldn't really bring up Jimmy and the rest of his siblings right away. So yeah, so who knows about that. Anyway, so Rogers is a singer and guitar player and is known in three genres mainly, and those are blues, folk, and also country. And the cool thing about how he caught attention was actually from his yodeling. Ready, set, listen to my yodeling. Here we go. I'm so sorry. I have to do this. Yole, 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 hee-hoo. So, oh God. So Jimmy had a few different styles, and he can obviously yodel a lot better than me. His yodeling actually sounds like something musical, and that actually played a huge part in him becoming famous. And as he was growing up, Jimmy Rogers taught himself how to play the guitar, and he started experimenting with singing when he began to perform in his church. And when he was 13, he won the talent show, and that's when he started performing. And apparently after that show, Rogers actually ran away from home, and I think he took like bed sheets to fix himself a tent. Very resourceful, and I don't know how far that would really get you. And in this case, it didn't get him far at all, because his dad, I think, ended up ruining the adventure for him when he tracked him down and then brought him back home. And then when he was around 14, Jimmy got his first job. He became a water boy for the railroad crew. And I think his dad worked for the Mobile and Ohio Railroad, so that job was with his father's crew. And he spent a while doing that. He worked the railroads, and he went from a call boy to a flagman. And after that, he worked up to baggage master. Sounds so official, baggage master. And then he was a brakeman. And during that time, he would sing and play the guitar in the evenings. And one of his nicknames is actually the singing brakeman. So you can see why now. It's based off of something pretty accurate from a job that he used to work. So in 1920, Jimmy married Miss Carrie Williamson, and the couple had two daughters, Anita and June. And Jimmy and Carrie, they stayed married till 1933, but we'll get to that a little bit later, so I forget I even mentioned it. And then in 1924, Jimmy got tuberculosis, which, by the way, is what his mom had died from. And because of contracting the disease, Rogers couldn't put in the long hours on the railroad, and he couldn't work the job. And with a lot less work, he had more time to concentrate on music for the next couple of years. So something good kind of resulted. And he was playing with some bands, and it wasn't all for nothing. And with his music, he made just enough money to make ends meet. So he really kept at it. And soon in 1927, he joined the Geneva Ramblers, and it was a string band. And in addition to that, he actually got a spot on a radio station in Asheville, North Carolina. but the appearance ended up falling through and the band was able to find another gig at a resort. So they just ended up performing there, but no Asheville show. So finally, Jimmy Rogers got his big break when he found out that Ralph Peer was, he was a talent scout from the Victor Talking Machine Company, and he was holding auditions in Tennessee, and the audition went very, very well. So the night before their scheduled recording session with Ralph Peer, what ended up happening was that Jimmy and the rest of the band got into some disagreements over the billing issues. So that following morning, Rogers went in to record by himself, just him and his guitar and his voice. And that day, Jimmy recorded two songs of his. He recorded Sleep Baby Sleep and The Soldier's Sweetheart. And just good things happened after that. And then he produced Blue Yodel, or some of you might know it as T is for Texas, with a very distinct yodeling chorus that you just heard in the Jailhouse Now. And that song really solidified his career just nationally. And during the next years, he had plenty of great songs, but his most popular songs were the 12 different sequels to Blue Yodel. Then he had Blue Yodel 2, Blue Yodel 3, Blue Yodel 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you get it. And these songs are fantastic. Like, who, I mean, this guy made 12 songs about yodeling and they're all like sequels of each other. And they were created off of 12 bar blues. And of course, all of them had his yodeling choruses. So everything was moving along just fine. And then it was 1933 and Rogers' album and sales and his concerts, they just kind of, I don't know, they started getting like lower and lower and declining more than normal because of a very important event in this country's history, and that was the Great Depression. And with all of that going on, his health was still not as it like at its best, and because the tuberculosis was getting worse and worse, it was really a tough time for him. In that same year, I think it was in the month of May, he went to New York to fulfill his contract, which was to record even more albums. And those sessions were getting tougher and tougher because Jimmy's like, I don't know, he had this declining amount of energy that was happening, because I feel like when you have such an intense disease like tuberculosis, like you don't really have that. You're not able to do like something that you could do when you just have like a cold. Obviously, that was the worst comparison ever. Obviously, it's tuberculosis compared to like, oh, I have the sniffles. So anyways, shortly after that, Jimmy Rogers collapsed in the street and he passed away just 2 days later on May 26th. And he was only 35 years old, you guys. What a shame. And now this man had a very, very short career, and it was only about 6 years for a recording career. So that was it. He really didn't have much time at all. But he still managed to have a huge influence on rock and roll and definitely country music. And his songs just had that special something. And his songs about, you know, hard drinking and hard work and some heartbreak. And it brought such an emotional state and a distinct tone for country music that is still remembered to this day. And I feel like especially, I mean, not so much women at this time, but I feel like he definitely was able to kind of relate with men, you know, around his age, because there was probably back then, and especially during times of the Great Depression, you probably had so many hardworking men out there and, you know, working kind of the blue collar job. So I feel like having someone like Jimmy Rogers who got that and who had that life beforehand, I feel like it's just such a good kind of thing having that relation to an artist. So I strongly agree with his many, many nicknames, mainly the father of country music one. That's very true. And there's actually a quote from Bob Dylan, and he said this about Jimmy Rogers. He said, "He was a performer of force without precedent, with the sound as lonesome and mystical as it was dynamic. He gives hope to the vanquished and humility to the mighty." And if someone said that about me in the way I sang, I wouldn't shut up ever. I would be like Brag Central 24/7 with me. I would be gloating and gloating just nonstop. And another music icon, Merle Haggard, he has also mentioned Jimmy Rogers, and we're going to hear from Merle Haggard pretty soon. I've been saving him up because he has one of my all-time favorite songs, and you know what? I'm going to save this for another show where I'll go on a rant. So anyways, Haggard also mentioned Jimmy's music and how he had the elements of country and blues, and he talks about the influence that he has had on so many artists, and He's even sang some of his older songs, by the way. I think he's like covered some of them. So that's pretty darn cool. So it just shows you, because it's one thing when an artist was like, you know, in the past like 20 years or so, but this guy was a really, really long time ago. So to hear him say how like music, you know, his music really resonated with listeners and how his songs are just masterpieces. And he remembers actually first hearing Jimmy Rogers from his mother. So it's something. It's really nice. I feel like, I don't know why I feel so proud, like as if he was like someone I knew, like, you go, Jimmy Rogers, you go. But it's just, it's so nice to see someone get that much homage. So this guy is still one of the most influential figures in music history, clearly, and that just about wraps it up for Jimmy Rogers. What a legend. So now we're going to hear some Southern rock, and our next band for the genre is Black Oak Arkansas. So here is their song, Uncle Elijah.
Yes, he cussed him good. He swore he'd lick him, yes, he swore he could. And he dared him to come to him if he would. And up it stood, even though it hurt, he knew he should.
Uncle Elijah by Black Oak Arkansas. And this band, I get it why some people are like, what the hell is this? Because I'm sure you guys heard that last kind of verse-ish thing on the second half of this song, and the guy kind of had a little weird voice going on. But sometimes, I don't know, I like it. Like, it doesn't really bother me. So anyways, I know so much about these guys. Too much, actually, because I don't know how I'm going to do a summary that doesn't take me 5 hours, but I'll have a whack at it. So this band, they never really reached the level of success that the Allman Brothers or the Marshall Tucker Band had, but they still remain a really popular band because of their style, which is described as raw and energy-filled, as I'm sure you guys heard, and plenty of testosterone from their lead vocalist. So it's a pretty good description. I think that definitely sounds like a band that can attract crowds. And now we're backtracking. We're going all the way back until the 1960s, the middle of the 60s, to be specific. So Black Oak, Arkansas started when a group of young and long-haired kids couldn't really find good work, so they shifted their focus to rock and roll. And they turned to music, but it wasn't exactly a fairy tale for them right away. Black Oak, Arkansas, they couldn't purchase the equipment they needed to really get their music going, so they tried to get away with stealing some random items and objects from a nearby school so they could get some like money from what they took. And the boys were actually, they got caught and they were arrested for grand larceny. And now I just feel like reciting a whole entire Law and Order episode. That one word, larceny, just set it off. Like, you know the one dude who introduces each episode in the beginning and then he goes like, the music goes like dun 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 or dun dun and then it starts. Anyway, so they were kind of run out of town after that situation, so to speak, and they relocated in the nearby Arkansas hills, and they just kept finding equipment and borrowing it whenever they could. And the band then went to New Orleans, and at that time, they weren't Black Oak, Arkansas yet, so they first started off as Nobody Else. That was their original name, and that was what they called themselves. And they had their lead vocalist, their lineup of guitarists, a bass player, and a drummer. And they recorded a self-titled album, which kind of flunked. It didn't really go absolutely anywhere after that. And they changed their name to Black Oak, Arkansas after that first release. So with a new name, the band started making several trips to Los Angeles. And eventually they actually landed a deal with a label called Atlantic. And with a contract, they released another album in 1971, which wasn't extremely successful, but from that debut, they started touring a lot, and they built a certain reputation with that rawness and that energy they had. And their lead vocalist, James Mangrum, also known as Big Jim Dandy, he was quite a character. Mangrum was, I don't know if I can say these words, so I'm not taking any chances, so just use your imagination right now. Let it run wild and free, but he would be very explicit and he would like flash and flaunt his body at like every chance he got. And it was borderline inappropriate, but then again, it was rock and roll, so it's kind of okay. It makes Big Jim Dandy style a little bit more excusable and, you know, I mean, kind of makes sense. And that's all I'm going to say before I ruin it. I had such an appropriate description, so I'm just going to end it there. And now just a quick word from Bosco, and then we'll get back to our show.
Here comes your weekly Bosco break. For 20 years, the heart transplant unit at Sydney's St. Vincent Hospital has been working hard to figure out a way to transplant a dead heart into a live patient. Doctors from the team announced their work had paid off. They have successfully completed 3 transplants using hearts that had stopped beating for 20 minutes, said to be the first such transplant in the world, according to the Sydney Morning Herald. 2 of the patients are already up and about, while the most recent recipient is still recovering in intensive care. Heart transplants typically rely on organs taken from brain-dead donors whose hearts are still beating. The Herald reports the new development could save 30% more lives. The surgeon who performed the surgeries says he kicked the air after he realized the first surgery had gone well. The secret to their success lies in cutting-edge technology and the preservation solution in which the non-beating hearts are immersed. The heart is first placed in a special heart-in-a-box machine that warms it up and keeps it beating for about 4 hours before the transplant operation. The preservation solution, which alone took 12 years to develop, minimizes damage to the organ after it has stopped beating and helps ensure it both survives the surgery and functions in the recipient's body. Michelle Gribellis, a 57-year-old woman who had congestive heart failure, tells the Herald that she was very sick before having the operation 2 months ago. And now, I'm a different person altogether. I feel like I'm 40 years old. In other recently fascinating discoveries, working along Russia's Volga River, archaeologists have discovered what's left of the 750-year-old city of Ukek, headed by the descendants of Genghis Khan. The researchers uncovered the city's Christian quarter, which was often visited by wealthy people. While some Christians were enslaved, the findings suggest that not all suffered that fate. The discovery includes a pair of Christian temples, one of which was built in 1280 and destroyed not long after. It was roofed with tiles and decorated with murals and stone carvings. The basement contained imported plates and bottles of Byzantine, Egyptian, or Iranian origin, the researcher notes. He also described stone carvings from the temple, featuring images like a cross and a griffin clawing a lion. Ukek was founded by Batu Khan, a descendant of Genghis Khan. It was part of Batu's Golden Horde Kingdom, which reached from Europe to Central Asia. But the city was destroyed in the late 14th century in an attack by Tamerlane, a ruler who took control of a great deal of the Golden Horde's lands. That's the end of your Bosco break. Thanks for listening.
All right, and we're back. So I'm going to go ahead and transition from Black Oak, Arkansas. I don't want to tell you guys everything about them because I might want to come back to them later on. And now we're going to be listening to my modern pick of the week. It's a song called Redneck Yacht Club by Craig Morgan. So let's go ahead and have a listen to it.
My buddies out on the lake, we're headed out to a special place we love that just a few folks know. There's no signing up, no monthly dues. Take your Johnson, your Mercury, or your Evan Rude, fired up, beat us out at Party Cove. Come on in, the water's fine, just idle on over. Toss us a line. Fast tractors, bail liners, and a party barge strung together like a floating trailer park. Anchored out and getting loud all summer long. Side to side, there's five houseboat front porches, AstroTurf lawn chairs and tiki torches. Regular Joes rocking the boat, that's us, the Redneck Yacht Club. Just flip-flops and a tank top tan. He popped his first top at 10 a.m. That's Bob, he's our president. We're checking out the girls on the upper deck, rubbing in the 15 SPF. It's hot, everybody's jumping in. Later on when the sun goes down, we'll pull out the jar and that old guitar and pass them around. Fast trackers, bail liners, and a party barge strung together like a floating trailer park. Anchored out and getting loud all summer long. Side by side, there's five houseboat front porches, AstroTurf lawn chairs and tiki torches. Regular Joes rocking the boat, that's us, the Redneck Yacht Club. Party's over and we're all alone. We'll be making waves in a no-wake zone. Fast trackers, bail liners, and a party barge strung together like a floating trailer park. Anchored out and getting loud all summer long. Side by side, there's five houseboat front porches, AstroTurf lawn chairs and tiki torches. Regular Joes rocking the boat, that's us, the Redneck Yacht Club, Redneck Yacht Club, Redneck Yacht Club.
There was Craig Morgan with his tune Redneck Yacht Club, and that's a good song. I like that one. Some people get a little turned off by the title, but I call it one of my happy songs because after I listen to him, I'm kind of in like a really good mood, and I'm just picturing myself on a lake somewhere floating around on a river rat or something. And who doesn't like that kind of stuff? I mean, obviously it's not everyone's idea of fun, but I like it. So this song's title pretty much introduces what the song is about. It's a redneck yacht club, but not like club status yacht club. You know which places I'm talking about? It's like the super fancy schmancy and wealthy areas, and they'll have like that one country club where all the rich folks will go to play golf and tennis and eat calamari and hors d'oeuvres and drink Arnold Palmers, and that kind of sounds nice. I was trying to make fun of it, and I ended up just making it sound a lot cooler than it was supposed to be, but whatever. It's a good description then. But I'm just thinking of what I've seen in movies, because I think you all know that I've probably never been to one of these kinds of places. And the only movies I can think of that I've even seen like a country club scene are in Golf Punks, Karate Kid, the remake of Starsky and Hutch, and Law and Order SVU episode. Again, with the Law and Order, but I'm kind of obsessed with it. You guys will probably hear a lot more references, but only Special Victims Unit. And then Criminal Intent is all right, but the plain Law and Order, no. Boo. I haven't been able to finish a whole episode just because I don't like it. Like the characters, or I never really get into the storyline. So whatever, but nobody get mad if my image of clubs is kind of off, because I only have those films and the TV shows to think of. So don't be mad. But I just feel like, I don't know, it's just, it's a very different kind of place. I'm not going to bash these. I'm going to move on. So anyway, so a place like that, it's definitely not my thing. But the yacht club that Morgan describes, now we're talking. And that sounds like 100 times more fun and a lot cheaper. So it makes me like it even more. And I feel like, I mean, this happens not all the time, but from what I've experienced and what I've seen and heard. And I think about this, when a song has the word redneck in it, sometimes it can come off as a bad thing. Like I said, like usually people, when they're like, wait, what is he saying, a redneck yacht club? I'm like, yeah. They're like, wait, what? That's stupid, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's because the word, I mean, sometimes the word can have like a derogatory kind of effect to it. Like it can be a bad kind of term. I mean, I guess it still has, since some people can get offended or like use it to be mean or whatever, like, you redneck. But now I feel like the word is kind of more common. Like, I feel like it's really thought not to be a bad word because it's more of a lifestyle now, if anything. So I think there's a big difference, honestly, between being like a redneck yacht club versus like a white trash yacht club. Like, I still think white trash is a little like, no, 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 no. Like, don't say that kind of stuff to somebody. And I don't know. So I feel like just getting called that is a lot better, because it is just, I mean, white trash, whatever. But redneck is just like, I don't know, it is like the way of living. Like, if you've ever made a redneck pool, which is just getting a huge tarp and throwing it in a truck bed and like bringing the tarp over it, and then you fill it up with like water, and voila, a redneck pool. But we don't call it a white trash pool, because that would be very, very mean. Redneck, you know, it doesn't cross the line. I feel like this is making sense in my head, and it sounded really intellectual and logical in my own mind. And I was trying to make a point, and I kind of forgot my point, so forget about it. Okay, anyway, so Redneck Yacht Club was written by, I felt like I was telling you guys like a secret. So Redneck Yacht Club was written by Steve Williams and Tom Shepard, but it was performed by Craig Morgan. Anyway, so he's a very well-known artist in the country music genre, and he has had plenty of really good songs. So Morgan was born Craig Morgan Greer. So he dropped the last name and just stuck with his first and middle name for his stage name. And he was born in Tennessee, Kingston Springs to be exact. And he didn't get into music until later on in his life. When he was 18 years old, Morgan became an emergency medical technician, and he served for almost 10 years in the United States Army. And he actually stayed in the reserves for an additional 6.5 years. And after active duty and the years that followed, that's when he came back to Tennessee, and that's when he started his musical career. And when he returned from the Army, he started working various jobs to support his family at that time. He was like a construction worker. He also worked as a security guard, and he even worked at Walmart. So he worked his butt off, and that was his life before becoming, you know, a famous country star. So he eventually found a job in Nashville, and he started singing demos for other songwriters and some publishing companies. And All of those demos really paved the path for him releasing his very first album with a record label, Atlantic Records. And that album was just self-titled, so Craig Morgan in 2000. And that album produced three singles and one of those songs from that record called I Wish I Could See Bakersfield. And that actually had a connection to Merrill Haggard. And so, again, I'm saving him up. And he is from Bakersfield, though. So that's in California, by the way. That's why I'm so excited, because it's like, oh, my God, Merrill Haggard, California, yay. Anyway, so a little after that, like a year later, Craig Morgan left Atlantic Records. And I think then the label closed down. Their Nashville branch ended up closing up. So in 2002... Morgan went and he signed with Broken Bow Records, which is an independent label. And through them, he produced his second album, which was I Love It. More great songs. And that actually ended up reaching the number two spot, I believe, on the Billboard Country chart. And he had plenty of success. And then he had another album that was A Little Bit of Life, and so on and so on. And he's still producing lots of awesome music, and he put out more albums since that one. And recently, well, actually, it was like 6 years ago, but it still is a lot more recent than Jimmy Rogers and Patsy Cline's time. But a while ago, Craig Morgan had a very special and important invitation come his way. And that was the offer to become a drummer. Or oops, I just mixed up the words. He became a member of the one, the only Grand Ole Opry. And very soon after that, he officially claimed his spot there. So I just want to quickly mention this music video for Redneck Yacht Club. And the video takes place in Tennessee out on Percy Priest Lake. And Craig Morgan and some of his pals and buddies are hanging out on the lake, and they're just fooling around in the sun and riding around in their boats. No yachts, just regular and realistic and not super expensive boats. And I already had kind of a rant on this yacht club thing, but so you understand where I'm coming from. But yeah, Morgan and his friends are just relaxing on the deck with a bunch of floaties. If you're super fancy, you can call them flotation devices. And they're just out in the middle of Percy Priest Lake. And that's the way to roll, man. Seriously. And when the weather is being like stupid and cold and windy, just like it was a few days ago here. And I don't know, it's just gray and cloudy and gross. I should be a weather lady. I should just stand in front of a green screen and be like, it's gray and cloudy and ugh here and ugh there. And I could just discuss the different regions and their degrees on, like, what are they, Fahrenheit and Celsius and whatnot for the day. Psh, that'll be my backup career. We'll see how far that gets me. Anyways, so when it's one of those days, this song just helps me get creative. And, like, it lets my imagination just kind of run free and remember summertime and me being out on a lake. By the way, if you guys should feel very privileged right now, because I'm telling you, one of my favorite places in the whole wide world. And I should never, this is my secret place, but here we go. If you like to camp, go to Morningstar, and the lake there is absolutely phenomenal. And I like never use that word, so that's saying quite a lot. And that just brings so many memories, and this song goes like perfect. And we'll go out and fish on our tiny little inflatable three-person boat, and then we'll just float around on tubies. And there's this big old log that's been there for such a long time. It's like an old redwood trunk, and it's huge, and it's been on the lake for like 6 years now. So that's what we do at our lake. And I actually, not even kidding you, I wrote my college essay for my application into Dominican on that lake, because the subject was like about a family tradition or something. So I wrote it on the lake. I didn't write the paper on a boat on a lake. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't write it on the lake, but I wrote it about the lake. There we go. And it worked because it's, you know, it is a family tradition. We go at least once every year. So this song definitely reminds me of Morning Star. And that is Redneck Yacht Club by Craig Morgan. And that ends the show for today. So we got to hear even more country and southern rock. And I absolutely love starting my week with some of my favorite tunes. It doesn't get much better than that. So come back next week at 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Oh, that hurts me just saying it. I'm like, oh, 8 o'clock, it's so early. But anyways, it will be our 9th show of Good Old Days, so be sure to tune in so we can hang out. And don't forget about me, because then I'll just end up talking to myself. So yes, come back here on radio.dominican.edu with me, your host Jax, and I'll talk to you guys next week. All right, have a good weekend or week or whatever. Bye.